Everything is better on a boat, and your vacation is no exception. This year, experience the world's most beautiful destinations aboard your own private yacht charter with The Moorings. Our fleet of modern, custom-designed yachts is just one reason we were recently voted Best Caribbean Yacht Charter Company by readers of Caribbean Journal. So when you next explore the Virgin Islands, the Bahamas, or elsewhere, don't accept anything less than The Moorings. Your vacation time is precious, so make the most of your freedom on the water. Book your perfect charter at moorings.com. Nothing less than The Moorings.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Plus $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
Fellow adventurers, so two adventures ago, we went and got ourselves cursed. In the previous adventure, which was two episodes, the curse turned out to be quite a problem. And now it's time to remove that curse. In this adventure, the Emblazoned Key Part 2, The Lady of Fallen Tree. These three men will guide you to the ruins of Fallen Tree, says Emily Taylor. There, in the sanctum of our most ancient shrine, you will find the deliverance you seek. You must make haste. The curse that afflicts you grows stronger with every day that passes. It may soon be beyond our power to defeat it. Start the adventure. Here we go. The sun had only just poked its blazing rim above the eastern hills when you meet with Emily Taylor in the overgrown courtyard behind the Red Wreck. She's not alone. The three men, their grim faces, chain shirts and broad shoulders, serving to hint at both their purpose and potency, stand behind the young woman. Emily Taylor steps forward and meets you on the shoulder cross and immediately congratulates you on your acquisition of the first part of the emblazoned silhouette of a Tacoback, a symbol now adorning the palm of your left hand. You're about to ask her how she came to find out about the symbol, which you have not yet revealed. What she says next causes you to lose your current train of thought. Curse of Black Tor can be defeated, she says. In Fallen Tree, the eldest of our shrines, you will find the means to rid yourself of it. Fallen Tree lies in ruins, and reaching it will be no easy task. It lies in the mist of Dragonmere Deep. Now, we've been there a few other times, and it's always been a thing to go into Dragonmere Deep. Emmett Hayer tells you that although Fallen Tree, the most sacred temple of her faith, lies hidden in the tangled southern reaches of the perilous swamp known as Dragonmere Deep, she has arranged for three experienced guides to lead you to the lost shrine. Alright, what's going on? Dragonmere Deep. Here's the lorebook entry for that. The sprawling swamp known for ages as Dragonmere Deep is home to both wild beauty and unspeakable evil. Even the boldest of adventurers choose to avoid this treacherous bog. She turns and motions to the three men standing behind her. They promptly step forward and bow, introducing themselves as Gar, Wailnor, and Jod. Both Jod and Wailnor appear to be quite a few years younger than Gar, whose grey beard and weathered features do nothing to conceal his advancing age. These three men will guide you to the ruins of Fallen Tree, says Emily Taylor. There, in the sanctum of our most ancient shrine, you will find the deliverance you seek. You must take haste. The curse that afflicts you grows stronger with every day that passes. may soon be beyond our power to defeat it. And should the curse consume you, then all will be lost. Emmett Haler tells you that you must find the statue of the headless lady in Fallen Tree, and while kneeling, cast 3 marked stones at its feet. Before you can ask about these stones, she hands you a leather pouch, synced close by a length of thick string. It's a pouch of fallen stones. That contains 3 marked stones, she says. You'd only cast them down at the feet of Our Lady's statue. The stones bear symbols with which I'm certain you're familiar. When you have done this, the curse of Black Tor shall be lifted from you. You will then be free to continue your quest to find the remaining parts of the emblazoned symbol that will ultimately unlock the lower levels of the labyrinth. One of your guides, Gar, a balding man with short, cropped grey beard, steps forward and initiates a shoulder cross. Let me say them, I'm honoured to be able to serve you on your mission, she says. He says, speaking with a noticeable accent common to those dwelling in the far southwestern region of Tysa, which I'm very familiar. Both Jord and Raynosh voice similar sentiments, each of them stepping forward to meet you in a shoulder cross. Let's have a closer look at these stones. This leather pouch, cinched at the top by a length of thick string, contains 3 small square stones. Each of the stones bears a single mark, emblazoned in black. The first stone is emblazoned with the silhouette of a skull. The second is emblazoned with the silhouette of an eye. And the third is emblazoned with the silhouette of a moon. Yes, and we are quite familiar with those 3 symbols. They're good men, Sir Quokington, says Emmett Hayer, taking you aside as your 3 guides gather up their equipment and provisions. Like me, they're adherents to our forgotten faith. I've only asked that they lead you to Fallen Tree, who there is no question that any one of them would lay down his life in your defence if the need should ever arise. They're all master woodsmen and adept warriors, and perhaps the only living souls to have ever been to the site of our most ancient sanctuary. They will get you to the ruins. On that point, I'm certain. Emmett Haler wishes you luck and tells you she will pray for the success of your mission and your safe return. She then wishes the same to each of your 3 guides. Well, the first thing to do is find our way out of High Madden, says John, smirking. I think the whole affair that once passed in will be just the sort of thing for that. Well or not, suddenly appears to your left, leading a horse in your direction. Emmett Haler tells you that she's seen to the acquisition of 4 reliable steeds for your mission. It'd be best to leave your own horse behind, she says. It'll be tended for you. I think you will find these horses quite remarkable. All right, goodbye, bye-bye. Who is my horse? Who am I saying goodbye to? Bye-bye, Stormgate. Bye-bye. Gar moves up to your side and whispers to you that the horses have enchantments placed upon them, greatly increasing their stamina. Even above Stormgates? He tells you the 4 of you will reach Dragonmere Deep much more quickly than would normally be expected. Bidding farewell to Emmett Haler, you mount up and fall in with your 3 newfound companions as you prepare to set off on the first leg of what you hope will be a swift an uneventful journey, but I somehow don't think that's going to happen. Because very few things are swift and uneventful when you're an adventurer. With Emmett Haler standing against the courtyard's wall, waving as you depart, Gar rides to the front of your small company and leads the way out of High Meadow. The journey out of the Heart Hills goes without incident. As your guides make your way steadily north and east, along a series of rugged, twisting roads that ultimately run into the Tanorian Pike, begin to learn something of your companions' backgrounds and the reason they were chosen to escort you to the Ruined Temple. Right, what is the Tanorian Pike? This ancient highway connects Tysus' capital, Turnus, to many central, western, and northeastern port areas of the kingdom. For much of the pike is patrolled by Tysian soldiers. Tysian soldiers and border rangers. For a good portion of it is either infrequently patrolled or not patrolled at all. Not patrolled at all. It is just uncommon for travellers to hire guards to escort them along the more dangerous sections of the pike. Looks like they've just not got the men. Men to guard all the pike. Because, you know, it's a medieval-y kingdom where the state is small and populations are comparatively low. And also they've got a lot more stuff going on. What with the goblins and the bandits and the undead and keeping a close eye on Tardson, training ogres, Otua, dragons, all sorts of stuff keeping their soldiers busy. Pirates, lots of pirates. Probably having to keep an eye on Caste as well, just in case they decide to just, you know, take some people. Yeah, it makes sense. It's not any fault on their part. It's just too much to do and not enough people to do it. Gar, by far the eldest of the three, tells you he was born and raised in Sevenhorn, a remote settlement in the southwest corner of Tysa. He was always fascinated by the dangers and secrets of the wilds, and spent most of his life hunting and exploring the North Broadlands. Your interest in his meandering account is subtly piqued when the bearded huntsman mentions that he once served as a tracker for Jirig Olgroth, a personage better known to you and all as the Troll Hunter. When you reveal to Gar some of the details of your own experiences as a member of Jirig's working company, the woodsman is visibly taken aback. And surprise quickly gives way to what you can only describe as a look of profound admiration. Well, how is old Jirig? Still chasing trolls? Or so I hope. If ever a man was good at something, he was certainly good at that. And honestly, I'm sure. He'd have to decide on a case-by-case basis now. Because he saw that some trolls shouldn't be killed. And also he saw that some trolls definitely should be killed. So I think he had to sort some things out in his head first. But I'm really not sure what he's been doing now. But hopefully he's figured things out. Maybe found something to do. You decide to gar a few of the small adventures you had with Jig and his crew, ending your tale with a return to Twythig on that foggy dawn, which now seems longer ago than you care to remember. Well, this is a welcome revelation, says Gar, gently patting your shoulder. I expected an adventure, though perhaps what not one so accustomed to traipsing through the wilds. I'll be asking you again about Jirig. Now, will I tell Gar about the whole Jirig's true identity? which I'm not going to spoil here, but it's a thing. It is a thing. You'll just have to play Proving Grounds 4 to figure out what that thing is. Or listen to my podcast about it. But I'd much prefer it if you know you played the game. My time with him and his men was short. It left quite an impression of it on me. There's something about the experience I've never been able to shake. In conversing with the other two guides, you learn that Jod, who frequently mentions his name, his full name is Jod Longire, hails from Mooksville. For he spent the better part of the last decade as both a guide and a guard. He tells you he was most recently been providing his services to travellers making the often dangerous overland journey from Krithic to Talanus. Goblins, bandits, and now and again an ogre, he says, wincing as he says the word ogre. I've seen what there is to see on the roads and in the woods. A virgin, no stranger to peril, Sir Croakington. You'll have to tell me something of your travels when there's a chance. And again, it's an honour to share this adventure with you. The most reserved of your three guides, Werenor, says nothing of himself. For you're quick to note he wears a skull-shaped stone amulet, the odd piece dangling from a weathered length of twine around his neck, hangs over the front of his scarred leather jerkin. That little prize was given to him by the Grey Mage herself, says Gar, apparently having taken notice of you as you glanced at Amulet. Yes, it has the power to summon dragons and turn giants to stone. That's why we keep Werenor with us. Werenor rolls his eyes. Both Gar and Jod burst into laughter. Gar steps Werenor on the back. And playfully elbows you, well, I guess in the back again, because in the back of the ribs, as he manoeuvres his steed to the front of the company. I don't know what it's for, says Werenor, as if taking a moment to carefully craft his word before speaking. I do know that it's always seemed to have brought me luck. Have you seen anything like it, Sir Croakington? And so, with the friendly and never tiresome chatter of your three guides hoping to pass the time, the four of you atop your tireless mounts wind your way out the Hout Hills through a flat expanse in an open forest and at last reach the Talorian Pike. Patrolled by His Majesty's soldiers, says Gar, waving his hand in both directions along the crumbling highway. Just don't have the budget to fix it anymore. And, you know, they can't be sure to keep the people safe while they're doing it. It's the age. The age of Ithion. It's making everything harder. The next small bit, however, isn't under any sort of watch. At least not anything I've ever encountered. Keep your eyes open. An undetermined number of miles pass by as you and your three guides ride steadily eastward along the pike. Despite the serene countryside that draws up before you and just as quickly falls away behind, you refuse to be lured into a false sense of security. A lifetime of adventure has taught you, sometimes the hard way, that deadly peril is often only a breath away, waiting to reveal itself when least expected. As your wide, your thoughts turn to the curse of Black Tor. While there has been no evidence of the effect of the curse since you returned to High Meadow, you can feel its sinister presence weighing upon your soul. You hope the trek to Fallen Tree will forever rid you of this haunting affliction. It is nearing midday when you pass by a deserted ramshackle inn and stables. The rotting, abandoned structures elicit a growing sense of unease among you and your guides. Gar seems particularly concerned as his keen eyes scour both sides of the pike. Odd, I thought. I would think that an inn along the Taunorian Pike, apparently, which, as far as I know, is one of the busiest roads in the kingdom, which would get lots of traffic and custom, thought that would be doing well, but apparently it's abandoned. Maybe people are just rushing here, rushing through this place as fast as possible, and just don't risk stopping. Or maybe something's happened more recently. Gar seems especially concerned as his keen eyes scour both sides of the pipe. A shrill whistle shatters what had been a momentary silence. Your head snaps to the left as you instinctively follow the sound. Several yards away, the edge of the womb, a feathered shaft protrudes from the grass at the base of the knotted elm. Ambush! Cries Jod, rapidly turning left and right in the saddle as he attempts to catch sight of your unseen assailants. You urge your steed forward, then quickly turn, hoping to place yourself in a position to counter any impending attack. As your eyes fall upon the road to the west, nearly a dozen ragged men, some clad in studded leather, bolt from the undergrowth, the edge of the pike, and set upon your three guards. Okay, is this just regular bandits? Those shouldn't be a problem. As your companions move to engage the bandits, you spot a bowman standing at the edge of the woods just south of the road, taking aim at Gar. Oblivious to the peril from behind, Gar struggles to fend off an axe-wielding assailant. Out of the corner of your eye, you spot Wegnor leaping down from his horse to engage the highwaymen who have pulled Jod from the saddle. So, what do I do? Do I rush forward to aid Wegnor and Jod? You know what? From what I know of them, and what I've heard of them, they can probably handle some bandits in an even moderately fair fight. So I think the bowman is more of a concern because it's got the surprise. Attempt to prevent the bowman from targeting Gar. You turn your horse towards the bowman and charge ahead, determined to prevent him from losing his arrow at Gar. As you rapidly close in on the highwayman, he turns in your direction and releases his feathered shaft. The deadly missile whistles through the air, streaking through your chest, picking a number. Bonus of 39. 19 from woodmanship, 20 from agility, gotta get 75 or more, pick now. 75, success. With 75, so it was as close as it could possibly be. You twist in the saddle, very narrowly dodging the streaking arrow. Your charge carries you past the bowman, and you manage to deal the panicked archer a single well-placed blow that sends him sprawling to the ground. Your steed slows and then turns. And you look back in time to see the bowman stagger to his feet and flee into the forest as the tide of battle swiftly turns against the highwayman. I thought they could handle it, and they could. As quickly as it began, the deadly skirmish with the highwayman is over. The remaining bandits scatter into the trees on either side of the pike, quickly disappearing amidst the dense foliage. Although a good number of bandits have escaped, several of their number lie dead on the road. I'm surprised they came after us as they did, says Gar, as he tends to the wound on his side. Usually a more cowardly lot. Perhaps they haven't seen many travellers of late. Apart from a few small cuts and bruises, both Wegnor and Jod have made it through the fight mostly unscathed. What seems to concern three guys the most, however, is you. Glad to see you all right, says Gar. I know you can handle yourself, but you must realise our position. We've been entrusted to get you to Fallen Tree, and that's precisely what we intend to do. Before moving away from the scene of the attack, four of you move the bodies of the slain bandits to the side of the road and make a quick search of their remains. 38 gold and some terrible common weapons. Thankful to have survived the bandit ambush, you and your guides promptly resume your trek along the Tanorian Pike, eager to put the attack behind you and proceed with your mission. Mile after mile passes beneath the hooves of your tireless steeds as the late afternoon wanes to dusk. Gar and the others suggest setting up camp for the night somewhere off the road. Jod tells you, who you already know, that Tanorian Pike is a particularly dangerous place after dark. Of course, the decision is yours, says Gar. Rather press on, we'll certainly make no quarrel about it. Yeah, let's set up camp. You decide to be best to west and resume your journey at morning's light. Or if crazy stuff happens, it'd be best to be well rested. Your three guides all agreed it's likely a better decision. Both Jod and Willania ride ahead to scout out suitable places in which to set up camp. Waynor returns a short while later, and you and Gar follow him into the hills south of the highway. There, the base of a steep, jagged hillock. Jod has already begun clearing a spot for a fire. Gar quickly tells him he's wiser to go about without one. We needn't attract any unwanted attention, he says. His tone bearing just a hint of admonishment. I've plenty of forage to eat that doesn't need to meet the flame, and it's warm enough. For that, we can be truly thankful. The spot, unfortunately, it's not been waning, because they would really need a fire. Because, you know, drying yourself up. Because you do not want to sleep when you're damp. It's just horrible and gross. The spot chosen by both Wellio and Jod provides both good vantage of the pike to the north and adequate cover. Sitting in the camp with your three guides, you feel secure, despite the vast, lonely wild that surrounds you. Last, the many swap stories, most of which are told by Gar, where he's the oldest, so he'll have the most things happen to him. The four of you decide it's time to turn in. Who's going to have first watch? Says Waynor, yearning loudly, as if to invoke pity. So I can take the first watch, or one of my guides can take the first watch. Now, I've no particular preference either way, so I shall use random.org to choose for me. Number one, looks like I'm taking the first watch. You offer to take the first watch. Gar immediately attempts to persuade you to have him. Let him stand watch so you can get some rest. But when you insist upon it, he eventually relents. Telling you to wake him in a couple of hours. Nearly an hour into your watch, long after your three guides have drifted off to sleep, become aware of the distinct smell of distant smoke. Pungent aroma seems to slowly grow stronger, though you remain certain its source is still some way off. Nearly time for you to wake Gar, when you're suddenly overcome by an eerie, unsettling sensation. You rise and walk to the edge of the forest, peering into the dark trees that surround your small encampment. Now, how exactly does he deduce the time in this situation? Because this is a medieval tech sort of civilization, so it's not like watches exist. I mean, okay, great big town clocks, they probably exist. But watches? They exist. They're incredibly rare and expensive, and not the sort of thing Sir Quokington can just get. And you'd expect to have around. So, do you keep track of time at night? I'm sure. Sure, people know that. Probably something to do with the position of the stars or something. I mean, it's not like we've got a fire, we can just watch it fade or something. I'm kind of curious about, I mean, if you're listening to this, you could go on the Swift Discord and tell me how they keep track of time at night in pre-watch civilizations. Yeah. The Persian aroma seems to grow stronger. For you remain certain it's still some ways off. It's nearly time for you to wake up, when you suddenly overcome an eerie, unsettling sensation. You rise and walk to the edge of the forest, peering into the dark trees that surround your small encampment. The sudden appearance of Wilna on your right serves to startle you. Did you see something? Wilna peers off into the darkness for several moments and then yawns. I can smell smoke. Do you smell it? Not very close to us, though. What do I was coming for? Must be a fair cloud of it somewhere. Go on, have some rest. I'll take the next watch. You nod and make your way over to where Gar and Jod lie fast asleep and make yourself relatively comfortable and allow your eyes to close. With your mind restlessly poring over the details of your mission, you drift into an uneasy slumber. Jod rouses you just before dawn to the welcome smell of freshly brewed paleo. Jar's objections to a fire on the previous evening seem to have been forgotten. Now, I think that's the thing.
Everything is better on a boat, and your vacation is no exception. This year, experience the world's most beautiful destinations aboard your own private yacht charter with The Moorings. Our fleet of modern custom-designed yachts is just one reason we were recently voted Best Caribbean Yacht Charter Company by readers of Caribbean Journal. So when you next explore the Virgin Islands, the Bahamas, or elsewhere, don't accept anything less than The Moorings. Your vacation time is precious, so make the most of your freedom on the water. Book your perfect charter at moorings.com. Nothing less than The Moorings.
Some things you wouldn't mind being stuck with, like a huge inheritance. But a phone that has to be plugged in just right so it charges is not one of those things. Switch to Verizon and we'll pay off your old phone up to $800 via prepaid MasterCard for a new one on us. Just trade in any phone from our top brands with select unlimited plans. $829.99 purchase with new smartphone line on select unlimited plans. Minimum $90 per month with auto pay plus taxes and fees for 36 months required. Less $830 trade-in slash promo credit applied over 36 months. Trade-in terms apply. Payoff phone requires smartphone purchase and port-in with new smartphone line on select plan. Must provide most recent bill showing payoff amount of eligible phone. Additional terms apply.
Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get tender USDA Choice boneless chuck roast or stew meat for $6.99 a pound. Then get 2 liter bottles of Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $1.49 each, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Fire is a lot less noticeable in the pre-dawn than it is at night, so it makes a lot more sense. Fire just barely makes you any more visible. But if it's at night, anyone from a mile around can say, hey, there's a fire there. That means there's probably humans, maybe goblins. Quite possibly the people we are trying to track down and kill. But if it's pre-dawn, it's like, I mean, if you can see the fire, you can already see there's people there, so it doesn't really add that much danger. So you barely any danger, but you get payloads. This is out. More than balances out. The grey-bearded guard smiles as he thrusts a steaming wooden mug into the painting, into your waiting hands. "I expect we'll cover a good bit of ground today," he says. "Weston United has done my old bones some good. Of course, this spot of paleo is hoping too. Just a few short minutes, the four of you are back in the saddle and winding away from the base of the jagged hillock. Wonder which you made your cap." Moments later, your horses burst through the dense undergrowth that flanks both sides of the pike and trot back onto the ancient highway. You've got less than a dozen miles from where you camped when you come upon a shocking scene. A small village, divided by the road, has been burned to the ground. The fire appears to have been quite intense, as nearly all of the settlement structures are now little more than massive heaps of smouldering ash. You suddenly realise this must have been the source of the smoke you smelled last night. When, if I hadn't took the rest, could I have got there in time to do anything? Could I have? I'm not sure. Time to check the wick. Okay, it does seem that if you don't rest, you'd catch it when it's actually burning. But all right, too late to do anything about it now. As you ride towards the destroyed village, your eyes scouring the burning village for any sign of danger or survivors. Your company is suddenly met by a small group of soldiers picking through the charred debris that litters the edge of the pike. The soldiers question you and your guides for several moments. Then they tell you they discovered the village, razed village at dawn. Only a few bodies were covered, and it's not known where the other villagers ended up. You wish the soldiers luck as they continue to shift through the smouldering remains. And in turn, they urge you to stay safe on the road. As you and your guides ride away, you turn and look back at the smoking ruins. An eerie feeling comes over you as your eyes descend upon the fire-ravaged village. You find yourself unable to shake the dreadful suspicion. The destruction of the settlement somehow connected to your mission. The world beyond the destroyed settlement proves largely, and thankfully, uneventful. Now and again you encounter a band of travellers moving along the pike, most unescorted, but several in the company of hired guards. Just over a broad stone bridge, as you're passing a rather dilapidated inn, you ride up on nearly two dozen mercenaries headed west along the highway. The armoured men are led by chain-clad, black-bearded men atop a galleon charger. Some of the mercenaries are mounted, though the majority are packed into a pair of sturdy wagons, each drawn by two powerful horses. The leader introduces himself as the captain of the outfit, and tells you and your guides that he and his men are bound for Twithig, where they will enter into the service of Thane Pomond. Well, I guess he needs more people now that I'm all the way over here. While Gar and the captain strike up a conversation, one of the mercenaries, a young man whose axe is slung across his back, rides over to you, eyeing you closely. He draws up to you and reaches out and initiates a shoulder cross, taken aback by the seemingly unwarranted gesture. But not wishing to offend him, he reach out and complete the symbolic expression. "I know who you are," he says, smiling. "Well met, Sir Crokington. It's my great honour to meet you. You're on your way to becoming a legend, you know. I'm an adventurer too. But right now, that doesn't pay as well as I need it to. This outfit is all right, though. We're off to Swithink. Might just scout out a little adventure there this time." As the band of mercenaries begin to depart, the young man tells you his name is Pirin. He then hands you what appears to be a long, curved claw and tells you to keep it safe. "The dragon's claw," he says, as he turns to a jaw rejoined his company. It's supposed to bear good luck to anyone who possesses it. I suppose you might call it a luck charm. It may bring you good luck. I don't think I'll be needing it any longer. Farewell, Sir Croakington. May the All-Father protect you. Okay, it's a Dragon Claw luck charm. This is the Black Claw, which you can only assume was a very large dust dragon. This claw was given to you by a young mercenary man named Pike on the Tellurian Pike. Pirin told you that it would bring you good luck. Now, whether it actually does anything, I have no idea. Because it doesn't do anything statistically speaking. And it doesn't have any little messages saying this is what it actually does. You thank him for the claw and ask him if he certainly wishes to part with it. He does not reply. As Pirin rides away, he suddenly looks and turns back at you. As for a fleeting moment, you find yourself transfixed by the unsettling nature of his stare, a look of deep, brooding fear, a gaze that only hints at the unbridled terror lurking beneath the placid, well-trained countenance of the bewildered young man. It's a look that forever haunts your quietest moments. I'm not sure they know what they're getting themselves into, says Gar, as he rides up alongside you. Trithic is roiling with trouble these days. I best take care of what I say, of course, but never mind. See, if you want to listen to me go on about it all, we've still got miles to put behind us. The Tellurian Pike eventually takes an unfavourable turn, plunging through the wooded hills that flank the kingdom's capital on the south. After leaving the pike, your journey continues on smaller, less travelled roads as you make for a town called Wanderstone on the southern edge of Dragonmere Deep. 3 days after abandoning the pike, you arrive at Wanderstone, hopelessly wary from the world, eager to begin the final and most perilous phase of your mission. We need to gather some more provisions before we head into the swamp, says Jod. What do you think of this place, Sir Croakington? Can you imagine living so close to the deep? I suppose you could get used to it, but I don't think I'd care for it. You go just a mile north of town and there's the swamp. That's just a bit too close for my liking. You spend the night in Wanderstone. Gar arranges for quarters at the settlement's ramshackle inn, while you, Wellinor and Jod tend to the horses, stabling them just down the lane. As the day drifts towards the dusk, you can't seem to shake the unsettling feeling that you and your companions have been followed here. Well, probably. I mean, a lot of people have an interest in what we're doing. In an effort to ease your mind, you make mention of your nagging suspicion to Gar. The grey-bearded woodsman listens to your concerns and tells you he has suspected the same. What Emmett Hayward told you, it wasn't much, mind. A good number of parties that might be interested in your comings and goings, he says. We'll be ready for anything that comes our way, Sir Croakington. Have no worries about that. Gar finishes off the flagon of ale he's been holding and slaps you off on the shoulder. Off to bed for me, he says. We'll be starting out early tomorrow. Out of Wanderstone and into the swamp.
Dawn waits.
Even before the early morning haze has completely burned off, the four of you have reached the southern edge of Dragonmere Deep, just to the north of the settlement. Looks just like one big swamp to me, says Jod, his eyes scouring the line of stunted, blackened trees that form a natural wall along the border of the bog. Don't worry, Sir Croakington. We know our way through it. Of course, Gar knows it better than anyone. We'll be knocking on the temple door before long. Gar tells you he'll look to pick up a trail he knows well. Not far from the in, inside the edge of the swamp. He says the trail will lead you directly to the area of the bog, which you'll find the Temple of Fallen Tree. Watch your step in there and keep your eyes open, says Gar, as the three of you pick your way through the swamp's tangled outer defences. It takes only a few minutes for Gar to find the trail. Through the path he points out to you looks nothing like any track you might have recognised. All three of your guides are elated at your discovery. Moving as quickly as the treacherous terrain will allow, the four of you dive deeper into the southern reaches of the perilous mire. For over 2 hours, you make steady progress along a meandering, barely discernible trail that snakes its way through the tangled swamp, moving from one firm patch of ground to the next. And now and again, Gar stops and leans down to examine damp earth. On each occasion, he promptly rises. Until all of you are headed in the direction, you said so. Gar is looking at something else during his frequent examination. Something he hasn't told you about. Not long after one of his stops to examine the trail, the path abruptly falls, veering northeast and southeast around a large outcropping of rock that rises out the top out of the spongy moss-covered ground. There's a mark on the top of the stone I made a year back, says Gar, taking a draught from his water skin. We can go northeast or southeast from here. Southeast is the shorter of the path, but it's likely to be more watery that way. Northeast will be a bit long, but perhaps beyond that. I mean, said, what do you think, sir? I leave the decision. But once again, I shall turn to Wanderer the Hog to tell me what to do. Hog, number 1 to 2. Number 2, shorter path to the southeast. Think it's best? Shorter path will take, says Gar. I'll take the lead, and you three follow close. We'll need to watch our footing. We'll get softer than us before too long. You haven't gone very far along the White Fork when you suddenly find yourself moving into a vast, muck-filled morass. Fortunately, Sir Croakington is a toad, so he's used to that sort of stuff. Rollinor seems reluctant to attempt a crossing, but both Jord and Gar are convinced that by going slowly and carefully choosing each step, the four of you will be able to safely navigate through the mire. It will save us some time, that much is sure, said Jord. We'll follow after you, Gar, old friend. Walking behind Gar, with Rollinor at your back, and Jord coming along. Four of you begin to make your way carelessly making a path through the oozing muck-filled pools. You've made it nearly a quarter of the way across the oozing muck-filled morass. Gar, only several steps ahead of you, calls back to you, Willow and Jord, urging you to take care with every step, picking a number, bonus of 40. 20 for woodmanship, 10 for agility, 10 from luck. Got to get 50 or more, or the swamp will have its due. Pick now. 121, success. You manage to make your way further along the narrow path as it winds its way through the perilous, oozing morass. You're almost two-thirds of the way across the oozing morass, just ahead of you. Gar pauses and carefully examines the path, then, after testing the ground with the toe of his boots, he signals for both for you, Jod, and Waylor to continue on, picking a number. Bonus of 40. 20 from woodmanship, 10 from agility, 10 from luck. Going to get 75 or more. Pick now. 79, success, but only dust. You manage to make your way along the narrow path as it winds its way through the perilous, oozing morass. You're only a few yards from the edge of the oozing morass when Gar holds up his hand and signals for you, Renor and Jord to stop. He bends down and examines the path and then waves to the three of you to continue, picking a number, bonus of 40. 20 from woodmanship, 10 from agility, 10 from luck. Got to get 100 or more or sink down. Pick now. 99, failure. Without warning, the narrow path upon which your perch suddenly gives way, plunging you deep into the thick, deep muck.
Your guides manage to pull you free from the bonds of comfort. Not before you've swallowed a mouthful of foul meat.
8 damage. After taking a few moments to recover, you carefully resume your trek across the oozing morass. That should be the worst of it, says Gar, moving ahead and examining the ground across which the next leg of your journey through the swamp will take you. It's firmer underfoot this way, which is where we're headed. Gar tells you it's not much firmer to the site of the lost temple. We'll be there in the next short while, he says, swatting away a small, biting fly. We've done well so far. We're only on the very edge of the swamp, mind. But that's further inside Dragonmere Deep than most could ever hope to get. Tricky part may be finding our way back out. We don't have to worry about that.
4 of you resume your trek to the swamp, covered only several hundred yards across the ground.
Our ground, with an enormous blood-curdling shriek, coupled with a loud droning buzz, shatters the otherwise steady, even soothing backdrop of sounds that surround you. His startled, desperate cry serves as an immediate call to arms as you, Gar, and Jod spin around. Your horrified gaze fixes on the danger descending out of the sky. Blood thieves! With Gar.
What are blood thieves?
Blood thieves. Large, black, flying, wasp-like insects. They're the size of you. Are aggressive, deadly predators. Blood thieves seek to suck the blood of their foes after injecting them with paralyzing venom, capable of immobilizing man's side.
Now and again, horrific terror of the massive swarms into large people. Were only those unfortunate witness such a fearsome spectacle. Truly, sheer terror. Gar and Jod at the side, he rushed away in Lord's aid as a massive swarm of the large, deadly, swamp-like insects descend upon him.
Gar cries out as one of the blood thieves lands on his back and delivers him a painful sting for his leather jerkin. He manages to throw the insect off, then promptly sets upon it with his sword. You quickly find yourself in the thick of the swarm, fighting off what seems like an endless number of the buzzing black predators. Doing your best to dodge the attacks coming at you from all sides, you step forward and engage the closest of the massive swarming insects. Begin combat.
Here we go.
Like most foes, it's +3. The hideous hovering blood thief thrusts its sharp-pointed snout at you. Pain wrecks your body as the venom of your enemy courses through your veins for 3 damage. And again for 15 damage. It is slain. 13 XP. The tattered, lifeless body of the blood thief lands on the ground to your right. A quick glance around reveals your 3 companions are all still alive and fighting valiantly against a seemingly endless swarm of giant stinging insects. With no chance to ever even catch your breath, you turn and prepare to engage the next of the vicious creatures. Doing your best to dodge the attacks coming at you from all sides, you step forward and engage the closest of the massive swarming insects, Blood Thief 2 of many. And yet, it fights just like the last one. And slain. 13 XP. So again, 3 of many. It's the same time.
Going in on 13 XP. 4 of many. Combat. XP. 5 of many.
Combat. 13 XP. 6 of many. Quick combat. 13 XP. 7, quick combat, 13 XP. 8, quick combat, 13 XP. 9 quick combat, 13 XP. 10! 13 XP. 11. 13 XP. 12. 13 XP. 13. 13 XP. The tattered, lifeless body of the blood thief lies on the ground to your left. The last of the wretched wing insects fly, turn and fly off into the swamp, swiftly disappearing amidst the dense surrounding foliage. You look around and are relieved to find the three guides have all survived the attack. George's face twisted into an exaggerated grimace, holds up his sword and displaying the limp skewered carcass of the blood thief. Gargantues at the gruesome display and shakes his head. "I'm not roasting that up for you on the fire," he says, as he dutifully begins to tend to his equipment. "Don't like those things," says Jod, tearing off the blade of his sword on some ferns growing at the edge of the nearby pool. "I remember running into them somewhere near Twindmore once. Honestly, can't say where precisely it was now." Gar said he's never seen so many blood thieves at one time. And Villa was quick to attest to this assertion. "Let's not forget this is a Dragomir Deep," says Wilnor, purposely exaggerating the swamp's proper name. "All while stretch of body you're gonna have a difficult time finding." "Well, there is the Merc over near Stormfield. You've ever been near the Merc, Sir Crockington?" Before you can answer him, but Gar announces the four of you should set off at once, lest any more blood thieves return. "There might be a nest nearby," he says, rising his eyebrows. "I, for one, have no interest in finding it. Shall we be off?" Without further delay, you and your three guards resume your trek. Southern beaches, tangled vine, every gorgeous stem. It's early afternoon when Gar announces you're approaching the wood. As you slap one of the countless biting insects, it's his first set of proteins. Jod nudges your arm and points it. There, rising up the soft ground, dark gazing all of the split to the remains of several times. As you and your guides make your way up, something follows. You quickly spot several engravings of the headless lady adorning the ancient stonework. When an orc, Gar and Jod pause and bow their heads in the direction of the carved symbols, or continuing past. "There we have it," says Jod, moving up to you to stand by Gar on the broad shelf of stone that sits at the edge of the dark pool, only inches from the slow-churning Makanoos, the most ancient of our temples, Sir Crockington. "Perhaps not much to look at these days. Yeah, but can you just imagine what it must have been like when it was first built?" "It is grand. I just believe it's so." Staring out across the wall, your eyes filled by a crumbling moss-covered structure that seems to stretch out of the very depths of Dragomir Deep. For not as large as Black Tor, the Temple of Black Fallen Tree still retains much of its ancient grandeur. A tall stone arch set into the windowless southern wall of the structure houses a set of massive stone doors. The enormous stone doors, which stand ajar, covered by engravings of Takaback. Gar turns his gaze away from the temple and is about to speak when he suddenly claps his hand to the hilt of his unsheathed blade, taking their clue from his unspoken single. Signal, Wayno and Jod spin to look in the direction he's facing and retreat towards their west. As you turn your eyes to the west, they fall upon a terrifying scene. A vast legion of undead, their tattered wenements bearing the insignia of Black Tor, are stalking through the swamp, moving swiftly and silently towards you. the army of skeletons and ghouls, preceded by the stench of death that rises up from behind their flanks, begin to spread out toward him. You realize that once the undead have come, trying to prevent you from entering the temple. Yeah, they do turn up when we get near their sites. And we're definitely near one of their sites. Hurry, get into the temple, guys. We can hold them off. Find the statue and get rid of the curse. See to this. We immediately sense not the first time before you guys are the sheer number of dead closing in may prove to be overwhelming, even for the Star Wars warriors. While Jordan will not move into position and prepare to engage the first wave of undead, your mind races as you wholly contemplate your next move. You know what? They said I should go into the temple, so I will. They can handle it. Well, they said they can handle it. If I don't deal with this curse, they definitely won't be able to handle it. Head into the Wound Temple of Fallen Tree. For it pains you to leave the three men in such a perilous position, you quickly realise by finding the statue of the Headless Lady and ridding yourself of the curse of Black Tor, you likely do far more of your companions than you could by joining the fight. You only hope that Gar, Winnow and Jod will be able to hold off the undead long enough for you to complete your mission. Hurry, cries Jar, as he prepares to engage yet another staggering member of the oppressing undead hawk. Go now, or we'll be lost. We can hold them. Hurry! With that second thought, you turn and rush towards the ruins. As you pass beneath the crumbling arch, filled by massive stone doors, engraved takabats cover both the outside of the doors and the inside of the towering arch. Just beyond the doors, you step into a shadowy passage.
Back wall, stone doors get back closed, firmly, shutting out the dim light of the swamp outside, instantly casting you into darkness. Wasting no time, you hold aloft your dependable light. It splutters to life, casting away the deepest of the gloom that surrounds you. As you attempt to push open the massive stone doors, use the buzz. You quickly come to the conclusion.
Trapped in the ancient temple. Well, that stuff again. Despite this unsettling turn of events, you refuse to allow it to affect your mission. Determined to find the statue of the Headless Lady and rid yourself of the curse of Black Tor, you promptly set off and explore the ruins of Fallen Tree. Okay, we are now in a dungeon. You're standing just inside the massive stone doors through which you entered the ruined temple. The doors are sealed shut. There doesn't appear to be anywhere opening them. This seems to be a convenient place to stop. So next time, we'll explore this dungeon, find the lady, cast the stones, and dispel the curse. And until then, farewell, fellow adventurers.
Americans are durable. We take pride in hard work and high quality. American Giant makes durable quality clothing right here in the USA, because what we wear reflects who we are. When you buy American Giant, you're not just wearing the best clothes money can buy, you're helping keep jobs and pride in your own backyard. Premium clothing built to last decades, like it should. Get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with code RIGHTHERE24.
At Verizon, anyone can trade in their old phone for a new one on us with Unlimited Ultimate, which means everyone in your family could get a new phone and stay on your family plan, keeping you close.
Hey, Mom, you seen my toothbrush?
Yeah, I'm almost done with it.
Oh, maybe too close. Trade-in and additional terms apply. See Verizon.com for details.